106.6. Okay, that was Def Leppard with Gods of War. I'm Dom Robinson, and you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. It's a weekly show where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games. There's some news, plus the charts, and a look at what's new on TV. DVDfever.co.uk is a non-profit website and really deserves your attention, so go have a read. If you've got anything to say about anything you hear about the show, get in touch via the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. Okay, so in the first part of the show, you know what I'm talking about. It's all about films, so we start off with a review of Spider-Man at the cinema, which I went to see recently in an IMAX version. Then we have a look at the top 10 movie charts. After that, we have a look at some of the new releases out this Friday, including Hawk the Movie and Dr. Seuss's The Lorax. And then some DVDs out this week, including Bellamy, Robert Pattinson, great, and Wallander Series 3. So, first of all, yeah, Spider-Man, which I say it's good, but not amazing. Haha. Yeah, it's called The Amazing Spider-Man, but, you know. When I went to see it, I wasn't expecting anything groundbreaking. But, in fact, if it not for the fact it had been showing on an IMAX screen, and having been so impressed with Prometheus in that format a few weeks earlier, I wouldn't have gone to see this one at the cinema anyway. It's the kind of thing I would have stuck instead on my Blu-ray to-do list, much like the second and third films featuring Tobey Maguire, which I've still yet to watch. You know the basics. After something unexplained happens at the start, as a young boy, the eventual teenager, Peter Parker, Andrew Garfield, is sent by his parents to live with Aunt May, Sally Field, and Uncle Ben, Martin Sheen, who doesn't seem at all interested in cooking, despite what his name might suggest. Aha, aha, aha. From there, he attracts the attention of... That was supposed to be me sort of laughing, not doing a funny noise. Anyway, from there he attracts the attention of fellow student and science babe Gwen Stacy, Emma Stone, who just happens to be a protege of Dr. Kurt Connors, Reese fans, who, for one reason or another, has lost his right arm. He's piloting the technical doohickey behind cross-species genetics, which he thinks will solve problems like his lack of limb, and help him create a world without weakness. Because he's the sinister-looking type, he seems to know a lot more about things than he's letting on, especially about the mysterious death of Peter's parents, Richard, Campbell Scott, and Mary, Embeth Davids, the former of whom he used to work with. Fans of the comics will already know that Dr. Connors is also known as a lizard, which gives you an idea of what's going to happen later on in terms of who will provide Garfield's first foe. And to bring things full circle, Dennis Leary plays Gwen's father, the police captain, who's upset about the fact there's a bloke dressed up in a spider costume running around the city and assaulting citizens, most of whom are suspects in various robberies. Oh well, to complete the main cast, there's Chris Zilka as Flash Thompson, Gwen's other half, although as her feelings increase for Peter, he doesn't exactly put up a fight for her. Now, I went to see The Amazing Spider-Man without having any kind of passion for superhero films, and only a passion for seeing something kick-ass on a big IMAX screen, following a viewing of the aforementioned Prometheus. And the next plan to see The Dark Knight Rises, I'm going to go later this week. Even though I thought all the Batman films over the past 25 years have been a bit hit and miss and never excellent. For the most recent crop, I thought Batman Begins was okay, while The Dark Knight was very so-so, and while Heath Ledger was good, he was not Oscar-worthy. But then we all know he only got that on the unfortunate account of him being dead. Anyway, back to the film I'm reviewing, and on that technical note, it was only towards the end that I realised much or all of the last 30 minutes, which is where there's the bulk of the action, the IMAX screen opened up to around 16:9, with everything else in the usual 2.35:1. It also went back to 2.35:1 for the last scene, and then opened up again for a final moment. There was also a wonderful cameo from someone who I won't reveal, but you'll know who I'm referring to when you see it. And I'm not talking about C. Thomas Howell, whose brief presence was welcome, but while in years gone by I would immediately have thought of him as the guy from The Hitcher, my first thought when I watched this film was, oh, it's Dewey from Southland, one of my all-time favourite US imports alongside Dexter and 24. By the way, there's four series of Southland so far that's out in America. When they show it over here, they show it on More 4. It comes out in January in America, and it comes out on More 4 like the following September, October. So this September you'll get series 4. But, you know, if you can watch you know, four series, do so, because you have to watch it from the start, really, to understand all the characters. So, overall, The Amazing Spider-Man is not bad, but not brilliant, and there's nothing in it that will throw any surprises. It's played for a few laughs, although not nearly as many as it could do, and in fact I found myself filling in potential lines in my head when they really should have been said on screen. Score-wise, I'd give it 6 out of 10 for the film, and 7 for the IMAX experience. It wasn't used a lot, but when it was great. However, as everything rushes by so fast, you can't really appreciate it all. It's also overlong. It runs for 136 minutes, and could easily be tightened up by chopping out 30 minutes, part of which could be saved by speeding up how long it takes to get through the preliminaries and up to the point where Peter is bitten by a spider. Acting-wise, everyone plays their parts reasonably well, but it doesn't feel like any of them are particularly pushing the boat out. Garfield looks decidedly older than 17. He's 28. While Emma Stone can... He's 28 when you film this. While Emma Stone can just about get away with it, she's only a handful of years older. Garfield puts in a capable performance as the hero, but it's nothing that's going to trouble the Oscar community. You know, next spring. As for the director, Mark Webb, well, his name didn't ring any bells when I saw it in the credits, but a look on Internet Movie Database shows his other feature film directorship was the wonderfully clever 500 Days of Summer. That really is worth watching. Oh, and for those who up and leave as soon as the credits begin, stay seated! For a couple of minutes at least, as there's an extra scene. Once that's done, there's tons of credits and nothing after. So yeah, film 6 out of 10, but IMAX experience 7 out of 10. Okay, so before the top 10 movie charts, we're going to have a bit of music, and it's a track for North Manchester FM's Natalie Hyman, who presents the punk rock show on a Sunday at 5 o'clock. And it's also the reason why my radio show gets broadcast each week, because I pre-record it and she uploads it for me. And today is her birthday, so very happy birthday to you. Get me words out. And the track she's requested is King Blues and Tear Us Apart. This is 106.6. 106.6. Okay, that was King Blues with Tear Us Apart. And you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. And this section, we go through the top 10 movie charts, starting with, well, number one, obviously. And I've mentioned before, I'll go through the US movie charts here, blah, blah, blah. You know why. Number one, it's Ice Age Continental Drift. Drift like my attention would be if I watched this film. $46 million it's taken. Jesus, why? Manny, Diego and Sid embark on another adventure after their continent is set adrift. There's an iceberg and the ship and they encounter sea creatures and battle pirates and something or other. And it's got Ray Romano, Dennis Leary and John Leguizamo, and it's another CGI film, and regular listeners of this know will know how much I detest those. I've seen the trailer and a few clips and it looks so predictable. And everything's going into the screen to show off the 3D effect. So if you're watching it at home and you've just got a normal telly, it's rubbish. It's probably rubbish in 3D anyway. It's probably only not rubbish if you're about 5 years old, which I'm not. Number two, we've got The Amazing Spider-Man, which took $35 million in its opening week. No, its second week. And it's taken $201 million in total. And you've just heard about this, so I'm not going to repeat it. You know what I thought. Number three is Ted. And as a result of a childhood wish, John Bennett's teddy bear, Ted, came to life and has been by John's side ever since. A friendship that's tested when Laurie, John's girlfriend of 4 years, wants more from their relationship. Now, starring Mark Wahlberg, Mila Kunis, Giovanni Ribisi and Seth MacFarlane as Ted, the trailer looks a bit of a laugh, and Seth does many voices in Family Guy, with his own being the voice of Brian the dog. But given how many episodes of Family Guy you could watch with a similar theme at home, is this really worth the trip to the cinema? I don't think so. I'm going to be waiting for this one to come out on Blu-ray, and then I will see it, but I'm not looking forward to it like I would do for a new episode of Family Guy. Number four, we got Brave. It's another CGI film. Determined to make her own path in life, Princess Merida defies a custom that brings chaos to her kingdom. And granted one wish, she must rely on her bravery and her archery skills to undo a beastly curse. It's got Kelly MacDonald, Billy Connolly, Emma Thompson, Julie Walters and Robbie Coltrane, and I won't be watching it. Number five, hopefully a bit better, it's Savages. And entrepreneurs Ben Aaron Johnson from Nowhere Boy, a peaceful and charitable marijuana producer, and friend John, played by Taylor Kitsch from John Carter, who's a former Navy SEAL, they run a lucrative homegrown industry, raising some of the best weed ever developed. They also share a one-of-a-kind love with Ophelia, Blake Lively from Gossip Girl. Life is idyllic in their Southern California town, until the Mexican Baja cartel decides to move in and demands that their trio partners with them. When the merciless head of the BC, Elena, and her enforcer, Lardo, Benicio del Toro, underestimate the unbreakable bond of the three friends, Ben and Chon, with the reluctant assistance of a dirty DEA agent, wage a seemingly unwinnable war against the cartel. And so begins of increasingly vicious ploys and manoeuvres in high-stakes, savage battle of wills. Well, that description makes it sound complete rubbish, but it's directed by Oliver Stone and also stars John Travolta, Shea Whigham from Fast and the Furious and Bad Lieutenant, and Penelope Cruz. And the trailer looks well-filmed and actually very interesting, so I think it's definitely worth checking out when it's released over here. You've got a bit of a wait. It's on September 28th. Also out this week we have we talk about the new films. We're doing the top 10 at the moment. Why am I talking to myself? I don't know. Number 6 is Magic Mike, and a male stripper teaches a young performer how to party, pick up women, and make easy money. Mike, an experienced stripper, takes a younger performer called the Kid under his wing and schools him in the art of partying, picking up women, and making easy money. Directed by Steven Soderbergh and starring Channing Tatum as Magic Mike, Olivia Munn and Alex Pettifer, plus Matthew McConaughey as Dallas, turning up in a brief moment at the end of the trailer. This couldn't look any less interesting. It's a boy meets girl tale where he's a stripper, and that's it. If you're a woman, you might enjoy it. If you're a bloke, you won't. Number 7, we've got Medea's Witness Protection. It's a Wall Street investment banker who's been set up as a linchpin of his company's mob-backed pyramid scheme, and he's relocated with his family to Aunt Medea's southern home. And it's got Eugene Levy, Denise Richards, and Tyler Perry, who also directed it. And it's just a case of a big black man dresses up as an unconvincing woman, the kind of thing Martin Lawrence and countless other actors have done in the past. The fact it's got 3.2 out of 10 on Internet Movie Database confirms how much it should be ignored. Talking of low-scoring films, at number 8 we have Katy Perry with Part of Me. Also starring Shannon Woodward and ex-husband Russell Brand as themselves, it's a documentary that chronicles Katy Perry's life on and off stage. Now, the plot keywords on Internet Movie Database are three-dimensional, but I think that refers to the cinema format and not any semblance of plot. The tagline says, "Be yourself and you can be anything." Although she always comes across as a plastic version of herself. In fact, to me, I think Katy Perry looks like a blow-up doll. Some people compare her to Zooey Deschanel, most recently seen in New Girl and 500 Days of Summer. But for me, Zooey has some class, whereas Katy Perry just comes across as brash and idiotic. And this one got 3.8 out of 10 on the Internet Movie Database. I won't be watching this for all the tea in China. I hope it fails. I don't even know if it's come out over here. I keep seeing posters for it in the cinema, but you never know whether it's come out already or whether it's planning a comeback. Oh, God, what a horrible thought. Let's move on. Number 9, we have Moonrise Kingdom. And number 10, Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted. Okay, so that's the top 10 movies for this week. And now we're going to have a bit of music before we go into the new cinema releases out this Friday. And this one goes out to Sunny B, and it's from Luther Vandross, and Never Too Much. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Luther Vandross with Never Too Much, and you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. And in this section, we're going to have a look at some new cinema releases out this Friday. Normally, there's 5, but this week there's only 4, because it's a bit of a slim week for films, actually. That's probably because last week it had that Batman one. But anyway, starting off with Hawk, with an E on the end of Hawk, in brackets, the movie. Yeah. It's always good when you've got to describe what the title is. Now, movie maker, come idiot, Mike Hawk, without an E, sets about making his latest movie, a rom-com called Get Becky Laid, and is followed in his pursuits by documentary maker and film fanatic Philip K. Longfellow. Mike Hawk also plays the lead character, and has named him Mike Hawk, after himself, but only adding an additional E to his name to distinguish the two. Mike's bitten off more than he can chew and is followed as he gets through the making of the film, achieving it only through sheer determination and ignorance. And quite frankly, the same would apply to me watching the trailer. I got 90 seconds into this 4-minute spoof trailer and just tuned out. It looks boring as hell. Don't watch that. Oh, and then we have Dr. Seuss's The Lorax, where a 12-year-old boy searches for the one thing that will enable him to win the affection of the girl of his dreams. To find it, he must discover the story of the Lorax, the grumpy yet charming creature who fights to protect his world. Starring Danny DeVito as the Lorax, plus Ed Helms, Zac Efron, Taylor Swift and Betty White, there's no doubt that a lot of great animation is in here, but as anyone will know, well, look, you've heard me mention it several times today already, it's got CGI in it, I'm not interested. I won't be watching it. What hasn't got CGI, mainly because it was filmed in 1964, is a re-release of Red Desert. The cold, rain and fog surround a plant in Ravenna. Factory waste pollutes local lakes, hulking anonymous ships pass or dock and raise quarantine flags. Guyana, Monica Vitti, a housewife married to the plant manager, Ugo, Carlo Giannetti, is mentally ill and hiding it from her husband as best as she can. She meets Zella, Richard Harris, an engineer en route to Patagonia to set up a factory. He pursues her, and they join friends for a dinner party of sexual play. Then, while Ugo is away on business, she fears that her son has polio. When she discovers the boy is faking, she goes to Zella, panicked that no one needs her. He takes advantage of her distress, and she's again alone and ill. Also starring Xenia Valderi, the trailer is one of the weirdest I've ever seen. The picture keeps pausing during dialogue moments as the subtitles appear, and I really don't know what that's all about. And I just flicked through the trailer, quite frankly. It was boring. Yeah. I won't be watching that one either. Then we have the last one out this week, The Man Inside, which is a thriller centred on a young boxer trying to distance himself from his father's gangster's past and the relationship with his trainer. Starring Michelle Ryan from Cashback, Bionic Woman and obviously EastEnders, Peter Mullen, most recently in Tyrannosaur, and David Harewood, who's been in Homeland and many other things. Now, despite some good key cast members, the trailer makes the film look utterly involving. So out of the four films released this week, I can't recommend any of them. So there we go. And with that, we're going to have a bit of music before I bring you a roundup of the new Blu-rays and DVDs out this week. This is 106.6. 106.6. Okay, you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. And this section, we're going to have a look at some new Blu-rays and DVDs out this week, starting with Bel Ami. Based on the classic novel, Bel Ami unites an incredible cast of actors, it says here, for a scandalous tale of high society 19th century France. An erotically charged tale of ambition, power and seduction, the story chronicles the rise of penniless ex-soldier Georges Duroy, played by Robert Pattinson. How can he be a soldier? Through the echelons of the Parisian elite. Also starring Uma Thurman, Kristin Scott Thomas and Christina Ricci, Bel Ami is a timeless epic with a modern twist, a dangerous liaison for a new generation. Well, from what I've heard about it, it doesn't sound anything like that. It sounds absolute tosh. And you can watch the trailer yourself and find out. But if you are interested, it's got interviews with just about everyone involved, plus some behind-the-scenes stuff. Also out this week, we have Wallander Series 3. And Kenneth Branagh returns to his BAFTA award-winning role as Inspector Kurt Wallander in three new feature-length episodes of the acclaimed detective drama based on Henning Mankell's best-selling novels. Henning Mankell, careful how you say that. Having relocated to the Swedish countryside, Wallander's fresh start is crushed when the remains of a young woman are found buried in his back garden in an event in autumn. In the dogs of Riga, Wallander travels to Latvia to assist the Riga police in the hunt for the killers, but soon finds himself entangled in a web of corruption with no one to trust. And before the frost finds Wallander fearing for the safety of his daughter's childhood friend when it appears she has become involved with a religious fanatic. That's about it, really. I never got into Wallander. I tried watching the first episode in the first series, and it just didn't grab me at all. It's Sunday evening telly for parents, basically. It's not for me. I mean, parents of my generation. Obviously, they're a bit older than I am. Also, this week we have Street Dance 2, which is out in 3D. Yeah. And to meet the world's best dance crew, Street Dancer Ash, Falk Henschel, and his new friend Eddie, George Sampson, set off to gather the greatest street dancers from around Europe, falling in love with a beautiful salsa dancer Eva, Sofia Boutella, in Paris. With landmark locations, the most spectacular dance fusion of Latin street ever seen, and featuring street dance legends Flawless and Akai, the sequel to the global smash hit Street Dance is Bigger, Better, Bolder and Back. But I'm still not going to go and see it, because it's not my bag at all. Not a great start to the films out this week, but we'll have a bit of music and then we'll have some more Blu-rays and DVDs out this week. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. And we continue our look at the new DVDs and Blu-rays out this week. Continuing with, Star Trek Next Generation Season 1, which is out on Blu-ray for the first time. But it's cost a fair whack. It costs £50 on Amazon. Featuring one of the most endearing ensemble casts in television history, Star Trek The Next Generation took fans on a remarkable continuing voyages of the Starship Enterprise, with Captain Jean-Luc Picard, Patrick Stewart, Commander William T. Riker, Jonathan Frakes, why did they let him direct some of them films? Counselor Deanna Troi, Marina Sirtis, get her name right, she's a woman, not a bloke, Lieutenant Commander Data, Brent Spiner, and Worf, Michael Dorn. The first season has been retransferred from original film elements to produce stunning high-definition images, including amazing visual effects that have been painstakingly recreated from the source material, creating before and after results that fans will love. The six-disc Blu-ray set also features a wealth of exclusive bonus material, such as archival footage, a gag reel, and an inside look at taking the next generation to the next level of high definition. Featuring numerous behind-the-scenes interviews, the new material also features Star Trek experts Mike and Denise Arcuda, consultants throughout this ongoing project, who offer special insights into the countless man-hours dedicated to the upgrade of the next generation. So, I never got into the TV series. I watched all the films, but I don't know, the TV episodes, watched a couple of them, but didn't really get it. I mean, it's pretty much the same with Star Trek TV in general. That I watched the films, but TV series, nah. Also this week, we have Wild Bill, which is directed by Dexter Fletcher, and stars Charlie Creed, Miles, Will Poulter, Liz White, Jamie Winston, and Jason Fleming. Out on parole after 8 years inside, Bill Haywood, Charlie Creed Miles, returns home to find his now 11 and 15-year-old sons abandoned by their mother and fending for themselves. Unwilling to play dad, an uncaring Bill is determined to move on. Although Dean, the older boy, has found a job and is doing his best to be a father to his younger brother Jimmy, the arrival of Bill has brought them to the attention of social services. With the danger of being put into care looming, Dean forces his feckless dad to stay by threatening to grass him up for dealing. If there's one thing Bill doesn't want, it's to go back to prison. He reluctantly agrees to stay for a week to help fool social services that the boys are being cared for. Having never really grown up himself, Bill quickly connects with Jimmy, and through this new bond starts to realise what he's been missing. He has a family, a place in the world. He is a father. However, the happy family setup is short-lived when Jimmy gets into trouble with Bill's dangerous old cohorts. To sort it out would breach the terms of his licence and risk sending him back to jail. Bill's next steps will show what sort of a dad he wants to be. A good one or a free one. Actually, the description makes it sound a bit rubbish, but the trailer makes it look like a decent, engaging and amusing British movie in the style of Guy Ritchie's decent films, namely Lock, Stock and Snatch. But the proof of the pudding will be in the eating, obviously. And also this week we have I Am Bruce Lee, which is an amazing story, it says here, one of the greatest icons ever to enter the public consciousness. The first film to truly tell Bruce Lee's story in his own words and actions, as well as through the eyes of international stars from the worlds of film, TV, music and sports. Original interviews include UFC president Dana White, NBA superstar Kobe Bryant, boxing champion Manny Pacquiao, Academy Award actor, nominated actor Mickey Rourke, Black Eyed Peas Taboo, legendary martial artists Dan Isonato, Richard Bustillo, Bob Wall and Jean LaBelle, and unprecedented conversations with Bruce Lee's daughter Shannon Lee and his wife Linda Lee Cadwell. Plus, the best of Bruce Lee's groundbreaking martial arts action films and previously unseen archive footage. This is the definitive story of a man whose legacy will enjoy forever. Watching the trailer, this is, as I've just described, pretty much just a series of interviews, and I think, to be honest, I'd rather just watch the films themselves. Maybe for if you're a massive, massive, massive Bruce Lee fan, then this will be for you. Special features include Backyard Training, Bruce Lee's personal films, Inspiration, Bruce Lee's Global Impact, Bruce Lee in Action, and theatrical trailer. And if you want to win a copy of this, you can win a copy on DVD Fever, a copy on DVD on DVDFever.co.uk, and there's a T-shirt as well. So if you go to DVDFever.co.uk, look up the competitions, you'll see it on there. Competition closes this Friday, so just get in there and do it, and you can be the lucky winner. Other new films and main releases out this week, we have A Cat in Paris, Americana, Corpo Celeste, Giorgio Moroder presents Metropolis in a limited edition DVD steelbook version, The Kid with a Bike, which I've seen, I've discussed that one before in here, and it was just a French film that's just looks terrible. Kiss Me, La Ceremonie, Meeting Evil, Pigsty, and The Prey. Some TV series and other bits and pieces. We've got Bedlam Series 2, Cannon and Ball Series 5, yeah. Chicago Hope Series 2, or Season 2. I enjoyed that when it was on, but I wouldn't buy them. I just enjoyed it watching them when they were on, they got repeated all on Sky a few years ago. Children's Film Foundation Volume 1, London Tales. Connie, the complete series with Stephanie Beecham. David Bowie, The Calm Before the Storm, under review 1969-1971. Hell on Wheels, Season 1. Mission Impossible 88. And Undermined, the complete series. And also some Blu-ray premieres. We've got Bear Grylls' Worst Case Scenario, which I suppose is him being eaten, but for me, it would stop his TV programmes being on the telly. Big Easy Express, Dinosaur Revolution, Forever Marilyn, a four-film collection with Some Like It Hot, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, 7 Year Rich and How to Marry a Millionaire, Last Days of the Dinosaurs, Last Flight of the Space Shuttle, Planet Dinosaur 3D, Shanghai featuring John Cusack, Some Like It Hot gets a separate release on its own, and Through the Wormhole with Morgan Freeman. Okay, so that's everything to do with films. Now, coming up in the second hour, we've got a mixture of video games and TV, starting with the top 10 games charts. But to take us to the top of the hour, we're going to have a track from The Breakfast Club, and it's Wang Chung and Fire in the Twilight. This is 106.6. 106.6. Okay, that was Twisted Sister with We're Not Gonna Take It. And I heard that most recently while driving to work, and it was just blasting out of the car. We're not going to take it anymore. And I thought, well, I was loving the fact it was being played, but I just thought at the time, unfortunately, I'm going to take it, and I will be taking it for the next 9 hours. So kind of dented it a bit, but fantastic song anyway. Anyway, in this section, we go with video games and TV of the DVD Fever show with me, Dom Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. Nearly forgot who I was and where I was. And of course, there's the obligatory cough. But in the first section, I'm going to look at video games, and we start off with the top 10 games charts. Then we have some new video games releases and some video games news. And in the second half hour, we look at back at some TV watched from the past week or two, which is Bank of Dave in 2012. A look ahead, some more programmes coming up, and Mashup Madness with Carry On Phil Spencer, Secret Agent. Yes, that section is back. And so to start off with the video games top 10. As you do. And number one is Lego Batman 2 DC Super Heroes. Number two, London 2012 official video game. Number three, The Amazing Spider-Man, which I've seen clips of, it looks rubbish. The game that is, not the film. The film was what you know about. The film told you about that earlier. Number four, Dead Island Game of the Year Edition. Number five, Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Future Soldier. Number six, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. Number 7, the Elder Scrolls 5, Skyrim. Number 8, FIFA 12. Number 9, Special Ops, The Line. And number 10, Mario and Sonic at the London 2012 Olympic Games. And there's some re-entries. At number 25, we've got F1 2011. Number 30 is Tiger Woods PGA Tour 13. Number 33 is Saints Row the Third. Number 34 is Prototype 2. And number 37, The Sims 3. So some video games releases that are coming out this Friday. We start off with Pokemon Conquest on the Nintendo DS. And it says it offers a new fun way to play Pokemon in a unique world called Ransai that is filled with adventure. In Pokemon Conquest, players take on the role of a young warlord who is linked with a Pokemon. Together, they must set out to recruit warrior allies to strengthen their growing kingdom. Along their journey, players will encounter a variety of Pokemon, as well as warriors and warlords inspired by the Japanese feudal era. The game contains nearly 200 Pokemon, including many from the recent Pokemon Black version and White version games. As a battle unfolds in the game, players must choose between the correct Pokemon type to inflict maximum damage on their opponents. In the turn-based skirmishes, players choose different tactics for intense 6-on-6 battles, and battle conditions can change on every turn, keeping players on their toes in anticipation of what will happen next. And while they're not my bag, all the Pokemon games are something my nephew absolutely loves to play. Although I presume he still does. He's now 13, so he's usually going around war-torn cities blowing people's heads off in Battlefield 3. So he may well have outgrown this by now. Also this week we have Brave on Xbox 360, PS3, DS and pretty much every other format at the moment. And in Disney Pixar Brave, the video game, you can challenge destiny and change your fate. Play as the adventurous Merida, a will-o'-the-wisp, as another popular characters from the new Disney Pixar film. Run, jump and battle your way through through puzzles and challenges across the rugged landscape of mythical Scotland. Mythical? I thought it did exist. With your wits and bravery, face off against fierce enemies and to end a magical curse and save the kingdom. And it features single player with Meridia, quests and adventures, and mini games and puzzles. Not really my bag, quite frankly, but probably one for kids, just like the film. And also this week we have, it's not really a stellar week for games, I'm afraid, Mensa Academy on the Wii, 3DS and PC. And Mensa Academy is a new brain training game that will give players the ultimate brain matter workout. The game will be packed with a series of fun and simulating mini-games and challenges filled with questions endorsed by Mensa, the renowned global high IQ society. Created in collaboration with Mensa, Mensa Academy offers players the ability to determine and improve their score in play, coach and test modes. Play mode challenges players to take on 100-plus replayable levels in 5 disciplines: numeracy, language, logic, memory and visual, packed with questions. For further training, players can use coach mode to hone their abilities and assess their progress in key disciplines before taking their skills to the next level in taking the test and discovering their Mensa Academy score. Will all that brain training have paid off? Who knows? Other games out this Friday include a Prototype 2, an inversion on the PC, and it does make me wonder, why do PC games never, or pretty much always, never come out at the same time as the Xbox 360 and PS3 versions? Always felt a bit weird, that to me. Still, there we go. Okay, so that's the top 10 games charts and the new releases out this Friday. I'm going to have a bit of music and then I'll be back with this week's video games news. And the music comes from Katie Coffey, and it's a wonderful cover of a track from the Alan Parsons Project. It's Eye in the Sky. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. And that was Katie Coffey with Eye in the Sky. And this section, we're going to have a look at some video games news, starting with the news that Grand Theft Auto 4's Ice Enhancer graphics mod has received its final update. Creator Ice Led Glace revealed that version 2.1 will be the last as he shifts his attention to improving the visuals in Elder Scrolls V Skyrim and Minecraft. The Ice Enhancer version 2.1 video demonstrates the visual enhancements Ice Led Glace has made to the game since its 2008 launch. Available to download now, the modder is also taking suggestions for other games to improve on its website and Facebook. And also an upcoming sequel, Grand Theft Auto 5, was announced last year. It will take place in the city of Los Santos and its surrounding hills, countrysides and beaches. Its lead character is thought to be a man named Albert De Silva, played by Ned Luke. The game has been tipped for an October release following a leaked developer CV. However, analysts, can't get my words out, have suggested that even a 2012 launch would be unable to save a poor year for video game sales. Either way, I've put a video of this graphics mod on the Facebook page so you can see just how stunning the effect is. There's also the news that the 3DS XL has been mistakenly advertised with 2 circle pads at a branch of HMV. The retail outlet's Cardiff branch is reportedly using promotional posters littered with mistakes. The inaccurate poster features a 3DS XL with a second circle pad in place of the D-pad and a larger telescopic stylus. It is believed the image being used is a mock-up created by a disgruntled gamer after the 3DS XL was unveiled by Nintendo. Announced last month, the 3DS XL gives players a total of 90% more screen space. The battery lasts between 3.5 to 6.5 hours when playing 3DS games, and between 6 to 10 hours when playing original DS software. Players will be able to transfer all account information, play coins, street pass data, unlocked hats, and activity logs to the new device, but will need their original 3DS to do so. It also comes with a 4GB SD card, compared to the 2GB that ships with the original. The 3DS XL will be available in Europe on July 28th, and North America on August 19th. There's also the news that Microsoft has confirmed that its new Windows 8 operating systems for desktops, laptops and tablets will go on sale on October 26th. Speaking on July 18th at a Microsoft sales meeting, Windows President Steven Sinofsky announced a date that customers will be able to buy new Windows 8 PCs or upgrade eligible existing machines. Earlier this month at the Microsoft Worldwide Partner Conference, Windows CFO Tammy Rella told attendees that Windows 8 will be available in October, but now confirmed a date of October 26th. New PCs and laptops released after October will come with either Windows 8 or Windows RT for ARM-based machines. Owners of a compatible older PCs and laptops will be able to upgrade their kit to Windows 8 for a cheap introductory price, and the company intends to offer free cloud storage via its SkyDrive system to every Windows 8 buyer. Windows 8 will be available in 109 languages across 231 markets worldwide, and it's Microsoft's first operating system optimized for traditional computing equipment and new touchscreen devices via its Metro user interface. Alongside PCs and laptops, Microsoft has designed Windows 8 for a new generation of tablet devices, including its own Surface line of tablet hardware. In early August, Microsoft intends to turn on its new commerce platform so that developers can start earning money from their apps created for the Windows Store. During the Windows 8 release preview launched earlier in the year, all apps on the store have been free for people to try out. Windows 7 was offered in box and download forms, and it's expected that Windows 8 will follow this pattern. The new software is will hope to emulate the success of Windows 7, which is the best-selling operating system in history, shifting 630 million licenses to date and running on more than half the enterprise desktops in the world. Microsoft has also announced its new Microsoft Office 2013 software featuring Skype and Yammer integration, along with a subscription-based iteration of Office 365. Now, I've still got Vista on one PC, and I've got Windows 7 on another, and on an older machine I've got XP still. And I don't know, I think XP still sort of has it in terms of, you know, basic functionality. There's a few things about, well, Vista's annoyed everyone, and 7, yeah, it's all right, but I don't know. I've seen if you've used what was it with Windows 8? If you've got an Xbox 360, you'll notice that your dashboard looks how Windows 8 is going to be, and I don't like it. It's very bland. I like the way the Xbox dashboard looked a couple of times ago, and then they mucked about with it, and now they mucked about with it again, and you can't go back to the old versions, and which really annoys me. But what can I do about it? Nothing at all. There's also the news that Microsoft has outlined updates and improvements to its Xbox Live security protocols. Xbox Live General Manager Alex Garden posted on Microsoft official forums explaining various security measures taken due to reports of account fraud over the last year. In addition to the improved security measures, Garden urges all Xbox Live users to check and confirm their own account security information. An explanation of how to do so can be found through the Xbox support page, along with the list of changes made to Xbox Live security measures. Updating account passwords is also recommended. He said, most importantly, many of our security enhancements and recovery processes are dependent on our members having valid, up-to-date security information in place. I encourage everyone to take 5 minutes today to check your security information and update it if necessary. If you have any lost or stolen security proofs, update them now to prevent any interruptions to your Xbox Live service in the future. And late last year, a number of phishing scam victims were targeted through Xbox Live, though Microsoft denied that the service had been hacked. Okay, so that's the video games news for this week. We're going to have a bit of music, and then we're going to have a look at some TV programmes watched in the past week. 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. And this section, we're going to have a look at some TV programmes watched recently. Starting off with 2012 Series 2 Part 2, which is on every Tuesday at 10 o'clock on BBC 2. Now, so far, the first two episodes of this programme have been absolutely outstanding as always, with the comedy writing as sharp as ever. Hugh Bonneville, as Ian Fletcher, ended up in hospital after a policewoman accidentally shot him in the foot, although he got off lightly given some recent events in the news. And Olivia Colman returned as Sally when Ian's PA went to get another job. It was great to see her come back, as I thought we'd lost her for good, as Olivia herself now finds herself in even more demand given her powerful performance in Tyrannosaur. So I'd say the final episode is on tonight at 10 o'clock on BBC Two, and there's 10 days left to try and tie up loose ends before the deliverance team finally hands over to the live team. Issues include what to do when it's discovered that the fireworks planned for the opening ceremony will trigger all the ground-to-air missiles that are in place for the games, how to respond when the environmentally sound charging stations installed for the official Olympic electric cars turn out to charge so slowly that the entire fleet will quickly become plugged in, unable to move. And how to handle a much publicised competition to compose a special peal of church bells to ring in the dawn of the opening day, but which so far has only attracted two entries. On a personal note, newly divorced and soon to be redundant Ian now has some loose ends of his own, including what to do with the rest of his life and what to do about Sally. I shall look forward to that. Also, it's on recently, we've had Bank of Dave. It's on Channel 4. And businessman David Fishwick is so fed up with the way that banks are treating people, he's decided to see if he can open his own tiny bank to serve his local community in Burnley and help the people the banks have turned down. Dave's plan is to open an old-fashioned bank and be a hands-on bank manager, giving good rates to borrowers and savers alike. In 2011, the bailed-out bank RBS posted an attributable loss of £2 billion, yet still paid out £785 million in bonuses to staff. Instead of bankers' bonuses, Dave plans for any profits to go to local charities, but he soon discovers that this simple plan is not as straightforward as he thought it would be. In the first episode of the two-parter, Dave went about learning how banks operated. Now, in part two, his tiny bank is finally beginning to help the people of Burnley. He takes the road in his battle bank and converted minibus, complete with his own cash machine and safe. And he gets advice about where to park it from ardent Burnley supporter and former spin doctor Alistair Campbell. And Dave heads to the US to gamble on the stock market, and he buys gold and property, just like the big banks do. As the idea of better banking gathers momentum in Burnley, Dave canvasses for wider support and to get the regulations changed. In London, he takes his message to the Bank of England, and in Scarborough, he meets up with Vince Cable MP, Secretary of State for Business. Dave then returns to Burnley to visit some of the businesses he's helped, and see what effect his loans have had, and find out whether the bank have broken even in the first 6 months of business. Is there a future for the Bank of Dave? Well, when he went to America, he made some money over his single day's trading, but realised that on other days he could easily just have lost the same money, if not more. He also made money from gold and property, but the more interesting part came when he was going about being a personal bank manager and meeting the public who wanted to borrow money from him. Sort of getting back to how things used to be, where you had to explain why you wanted the loan. In this time, he helped a village cafe, as well as giving them money, he also gave them ideas, such as allowing them to hire an apprentice. Also, there's a tropical fish shop, which took a loan to build a shark tank as a central feature, which has brought back many customers who hadn't been in there in years. And from the start, the Financial Services Authority refused to meet him, and everyone told him he would fail. He hired a legal team to help him make it work, and by the end of it, he said he'd given himself 6 months to see if he'd make a profit. And he did. It was only around 10 grand, but it's better than the banks who lost billions. Personally, I'd like to put my money in his bank, what little I have, as it would make 5% interest. If you want to see it again, I'm sure part one's on 4OD, and part two is repeated on Channel 4 tonight, just after midnight at 12:15 a.m. Oh, and also in this recently, there was also the Angelos Epithemiou show, which was bloody awful. Okay, so that's all the TV programmes worth mentioning from the past couple of weeks, well, except for Angelos. Not many, I know, but there's not been much to shout about, really, lately. So we're going to have a bit of music, and then we'll have a look at some new programmes coming up in the coming week, including John Richardson, A Little Bit OCD. So this is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. And in this section, we're going to have a look at some programmes coming up in the coming week, starting with John Richardson, A Little Bit OCD, which is on Channel 4 tonight at 10 o'clock. And for the past decade, comedian John Richardson's life has been driven by a quest for perfection. It dictated everything from his eating habits and his relationship with his mother to his ability to go on dates or entertain the idea of living with his friends. His obsessive nature and the need to control the world around him was minutely detailed in his book It's Not Me, It's You, and now he delves into the world of obsessive compulsive disorders. John is not alone. After writing an article about his exacting nature affecting his ability to find a suitable girlfriend last year, he was inundated with letters from readers who identified with his compulsive need for immaculate cleanness, precision and organisation. But John admits he knows very little about the condition. So that's on tonight, Channel 4, at 10 o'clock. Tomorrow, we've got Bert and Dickie, which, oh God, the number of times this trailer's been on. It better be worth it, but I doubt it will be. It's on BBC One at 8:30 tomorrow night, and thrown together just 5 weeks before the final of the 1948 London Olympics, Bert Bushnell and Dickie Burnell defied all the odds and achieved gold in the double sculls. This is the story of how they did it. Not only by pushing physical and emotional limits, but also by confronting and overcoming their vast professional and personal differences. Directed by David Blair, it stars Matt Smith, Sam Hoare, Jeffrey Palmer, Douglas Hodge, Lindsay Allen and Thomas Arnold. Also on this week is Obsessive Compulsive Hoarder, The Big Clear Out, on Thursday 9 o'clock on Channel 4. And Four Goes Mad is a bold season of primetime programming challenging mental health stigma and discrimination. As part of the season, this documentary meets Richard Wallace once again, whose moving story was seen last year as he struggled to overcome the hoarding that had taken over his life with help from his community. Chronic hoarder Richard Wallace was living in squalor. His hoarding was so out of control that his own life was in danger. Mountains of papers and packaging filled his home from floor to ceiling and worryingly surrounded his gas cooker where he made his boiled eggs and toast. Richard was shunned by many of the residents from Westcott Village until landscape gardener Andy Honey offered to help. Becoming Richard's closest friend, Andy rallied the village to help clear 60 tons of rubbish from Richard's garden. 6 months later, Andy is still by Richard's side. The first episode of this was really good. It was on just before, it was sort of in between Christmas and New Year, I think. But yeah, definitely worth a watch that was. So I'd recommend this. That's Thursday, 9 o'clock on Channel 4. Now, there's also, part of the same season, there's Ruby Wax's Mad Confessions, which I've not seen yet. It was on last night on Channel 4, but it's repeated on 4-7 on Wednesday at 10 o'clock. And audiences remember Ruby Wax as a larger-than-life comedian. Now her career has taken a different turn. She says, "I become the poster girl for mental health." Building on the success of her current mental health stage show, during which the audience is encouraged to speak openly about their own experiences, Ruby is passionate about making this documentary as part of the Four Goes Mad season, in which she campaigns to break down the stigma that still surrounds mental illness. She wants to support people who choose to stand up and be honest about their condition, and follows three successful business people as they disclose their mental illness to their employers, and in some cases their friends. Ruby also takes her case to the House of Commons to find out the current state of the law, and meets the MPs who recently spoke openly for the first time about their mental health conditions during a parliamentary debate. Now, it's also something that was on last night, which I have no intention of watching, to be honest. It gets a repeat on BBC One on this Thursday at 10:35. It's the last, hopefully the very last, Absolutely Fabulous episodes. This one's all about Olympics. And it says the award-winning sitcom returns for a new episode. Adina forgets the Olympics are on until it gets her closer to her idol, Stella McCartney. No, thank you. Also, on the TV this week, we have Sex Story, 50 Shades of Grey. It's on Channel 4, Sunday at 10 o'clock. And it examines the phenomenon of the UK's fastest-selling paperback of all time. Has it really transformed us from a nation of prudes to one of happy spankers? It may have brought bondage into the mainstream, but are the British really ready to embrace sexual experimentation? From visiting a spanking class where novices are trained in the art of a good caning, to exploring the world of an S&M couple who have written sex contracts with each other and have honed their more extreme practice to perfection, this documentary uncovers what 50 Shades of Grey craze tells us about 21st century Britain. The programme examines the sociological and cultural effects the book is having in the UK as sales of obscure classical music and bondage gear increase. There you go, that's one for women. Some films on TV this in the coming week. Would you believe ITV, of all channels, are showing A Clockwork Orange. That's at Wednesday at 10:50. Also on Saturday night, ITV, they're showing Alexander, which is 10:55. It's the one where Angelina Jolie plays Colin Farrell's mum, even though she's only about a year older than him. It's also one where Oliver Stone's director's cut was actually shorter than the original when it came out, which is a bit bizarre. There's also a film called The Women on Channel 4 Saturday at 9 o'clock with Meg Ryan, Eva Mendes and Annette Bening heading an all-female cast in this comedy-drama, a remake of George Cukor's 1939 satire from writer-director Diane English. And also stars Jada Pinkett Smith, Bette Midler and Deborah Messing, who's only worth noting for the fact her surname is Messing, stupid name. One film that looks a bit more interesting is Red Cliff, that comes straight after it on Channel 4 on Saturday at 10 past 11, where director John Woo returned home from his lengthy period of working in Hollywood to make this astonishing fact-based historical epic, at a time the most expensive Chinese film ever. The action revolves around a pivotal moment in Chinese history, the Battle of Red Cliff in AD 208, when the ruling but weak Han dynasty gave permission to an immensely powerful northern warlord to crush two rivals who had control over lands to the south. But the two weaker foes think they have spotted a way to overturn the odds against them. Originally, Wu's film was released in two parts, totaling well over 4 hours in length. This print is a much shorter international version, and the editing process has inevitably left out some of the plot intricacies and historical detail. It left them a bit confused. But what remains, it says here, is a magnificent, immersive adventure with gargantuan battle scenes, clever strategies to undermine the foe, and even the odd romantic subplot. So that's on Channel 4, Saturday, 10 past 11. Okay, so we're going to have a bit of music, and it's time for it's that time of the week for one of my guilty pleasures. This week it's a track that seems to get higher and higher in pitch, and it's just mental. It's Tina Marie, and I Love to Love. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Tina Marie and I Love to Love. And it's the last section of this week's DVD Fever show with me, Don Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. And it's another Mashup Madness. Now, one thing I like to do is make mashup videos, and they're on the Dom Says XL YouTube video page thingy. They're usually made up from several different TV shows and lasting around 1 or 2 minutes, but I've also had some of them featured on XFM Manchester's Breakfast Show with Tim Cocker and Jim Bob. And last September, one of them was also on RudeTube, for which the polite title was Snooker Loopy. But following from a comment from Dennis Taylor about one of Mark Allen's little traits, the full title became Snooker Loopy, Fist Pumping in the Commentary Box. This week I'm going to feature my latest video. It's Carry On, Phil Spencer's Secret Agent, which features all of the innuendo moments from Series 2. And fans of the show, Series 3 is now on Channel 4 on Fridays at 8 o'clock. And I watched the first episode, and within the first minute, they were showing clips from episodes that were still to come. And he was talking about a particular item in the bathroom and the sort of construction, the colour of its frame. And basically, quite frankly, he managed to get into the first minute of the show, the words golden shower, because that's what was standing in the corner of the room, in the bathroom. What did you think I was talking about? Honestly, clean your mind. Anyway, I say the program's every Friday at 8 o'clock. And do let me know what you think of this section, by the way. So here we go. It's Carry On, Phil Spencer, Secret Agent. This is 106.6.
I know you're going to dig this.
This week, I've had my hands on two different semis. Yes, it's been hard, but finally, it looks as though everything's coming together.
How did you fit it all in?
Hard work, really hard work.
And there's no good reason on earth why a sizeable semi here shouldn't have had a buyer grab onto it a long time ago.
And a first-time buyer who's never done this before, and they come in here and they see that and they think, ooh.
Especially my mum. You know, she's desperate, more desperate than us.
She's even got her chakras out on display.
But if that was exposed, that would actually look really nice.
Lovely fur coat, but sadly lacking in knickers.
Hope you don't mind, I've had a little peek round myself.
Oh, that's... Nigel, I haven't even started yet.
Somehow I get the feeling that pretty much everything I've said has gone in one ear, straight out the other.
But unsightly damp patches aren't the only problem these lads are having in the bedroom department.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, let's go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a secret agent always carries protection.
The P word. Something that's always difficult to discuss.
Ready for business.
Every single inch counts.
As I sit here and now, that's what I want to do because I love it.
It's been really hard, actually.
You had a lot. It's no dog poo. It's always a bonus.
Okay, so for now, that's everything for this week. So thanks to everyone who listened. And check out all the trailer links and gaming footage on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. And I'll be back next week for some more movies, games and TV. And I'm going to finish on an Eric Clapton classic. And from the fantastic 4-CD box set Crossroads, which came out in 1989 and features about 3 million songs, this is it's Cream and Sunshine of Your Love. It's in 106.6.
106.6.